So the teaching of Vimalakirti. This is the name of the text. And this is, in the main, what it actually is. It's not primarily the teaching of the Buddha, that is to say, Gautama the Buddha, Shakyamuni, at all. The Buddha, Shakyamuni, does, of course, appear in the text, especially at the beginning and again at the end. But the teaching, primarily, is that of Vimalakirti. Though the Buddha himself, Shakyamuni, does, as it were, adopt the work at the end. There could be another reason why the Vimalakirti is not actually described as a sutra. Sutra perhaps suggests something, as it were, spiritually, dare I say it, authoritative. It's not really so, of course, because spiritually authoritative, in fact, is a contradiction in terms. But it may seem like that, at least to some people. After all, the sutra comes from the Buddha, or a sutra comes from the Buddha. It contains the Buddha's teaching, and the Buddha is the supremely, the perfectly enlightened one. So we, hearing or reading the sutra, may feel we've no choice but just to accept whatever the Buddha says, because after all, he knows. And we don't know. So we may feel we've no choice but to accept what the Buddha says in the sutra, whether we like it or whether we don't. And this may create, we may say, in our minds, some little resistance. But suppose a text is not actually labelled a sutra. Supposing you don't have to regard it as spiritually authoritative. Suppose we can read it quite straightforwardly, just as we read through any other work of imagination, a novel, a poem, a short story. Suppose we can read this Buddhist text, more or less, like we read literature. Read it as literature, rather than as dogma. Read it more as poetry than as a statement of scientific fact or philosophic truth. If we could read it in that sort of way, perhaps we then might be more open to its spiritual influence, might be more receptive to its message, might allow ourselves to be captivated a little bit by its magic. And this suggests a further thought. If it might be helpful to read sutras more as works of imagination, it might be equally helpful to read works of imagination more as sutras. But I've no time to pursue this thought further. Perhaps I'll be able to do so on some other occasion. But in the meantime, I'll simply point out that such a thought suggests a profounder conception of the imagination than is usually the case nowadays.